Hey, it's Craig from Revolution Radio. This is just a reminder. Can you hit that subscribe button? That way you never miss a new episode of Canadian AF. Thanks so much for listening to Revolution Radio and enjoy this podcast. Just sending a message to our man Derek here. And I'm making sure that everyone out there can hear it. Hi! Canadian AF, Revolution Radio Canada.
Hold on, let me read Craig's messages. Derek, if we go long, dump R when you have to.
Did I say dump R? I meant dump out. Dump out.
Like, what am I dumping of yours?
Dump.
What have you given me?
Dump out. There we go. That means leave.
Jump out.
Jump out. Whatever you want.
Seems much better than dump.
Episode 87 of Canadian as Fuck right here on Revolution Radio Canada. Welcome, everybody. Oh, my God. We've shit the bed already, and we've just started.
Yeah.
Welcome, everybody. Nice one, John. Dimitri Alexiou, Derek Lewis joining us as always. Derek, unfortunately, doesn't have a whole heck of a lot of time tonight, so we will enjoy him while we still have him.
I have to speak with the man from Bombay.
Oh, nice. Fantastic. Yeah. And underneath...
I thought it was called Mumbai these days.
Mm-hmm. I'm a traditionalist.
Okay, he's so an analog. Don't say guy. Russia.
It's still Istanbul.
Okay, gotcha.
Not Constantinople.
It was, thanks very much.
A traditionalist would call it Constantinople because it was called that before.
Yeah. All right. So this is precisely the type of stuff that we can't do if we want to keep Derek for as long as possible. So we have our guest tonight is John Feeling, an old pal of Derek's, and Derek brought him in for us. So we can't wait to have a chat with him. So we're going to get things going. Dimitri, take it away, my friend.
Canadian as Fuck would like to begin by acknowledging the Indigenous peoples of all the lands that we are on today. While we meet tonight on a virtual platform, we would like to take a moment to acknowledge the importance of the lands that we call home. And we do this to reaffirm our commitment and responsibility in improving relationships between nations, to improving our own understanding of local Indigenous peoples and cultures, and to try to move forward in a spirit of reconciliation and collaboration.
Thank you, Dimitri. Greatly appreciate it, as always. Derek, again, as I say, did you guys hear that? That was my wife blowing her note. That was amazing. That was fantastic. All right. So Derek brought this guest in for us this evening. His name is John Feeling. Derek, take it away.
Hi, John.
Hey, Bad. How are you?
I'm good. You see, do you like stuff?
See how informal we are here? Stuff. Hey, John.
You dig my... I'm glad. I appreciate that. So yeah, you play in bands.
I do.
Cool.
Yeah, I think.
Is it fun?
Sometimes.
This is the worst intro I've ever heard in my entire life. Holy shit.
I think that Derek is ripping off Chris Farley on
Saturday Night. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That's right. You remember when you said... And in the end, the love is equal to the love you make. Do you mean that?
John, how does it feel to be in the position of Paul McCartney?
I was just about to say, I'm like, if this is the person to kind of do it, I feel pretty honored. Yeah. Those are big shoes. Seriously. To feel. But the only problem is like, you're not going to be able to ask me cool questions that people are going to know what you're talking about. It'll be like lyrics to very irrelevant music that they're like, and wait a minute, how old is this guy? And he's still upset about things.
What was it like the first time you met John Lennon? Stuff like that,
he's exactly. A dick. Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Sorry. John Feeling is a singer, a songwriter, band leader, musician extraordinaire. You're producing now, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been producing for a while, and then kind of worked in the music business on the label side for the last 13 years as well.
Nice. Which label?
It was at Sony Music.
Well, do you by any chance know a fellow by the name of John Davies? Do you know that name?
Davies is one of my best buds. I love Davies. I was with him a couple weekends ago.
Are you serious? Say hi to him for me, please. I worked with him at the Edge. He's a super awesome guy.
Okay, I will do. I will do. Yeah, we live down the street from each other, so we haven't been in the same office building for a while because he's been over at uni for the last sort of 5 years. But yeah, he's a dear friend.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yep.
Nice.
And he's a bass player.
He is.
John. Yes. Let's talk a little bit about your background.
Okay.
What bands have you been in? Because you're part of the 905. You're part of the Burlington scene. And we all know you guys just were like, oh, we're going to make this band. And then it was like, okay, now we're going to make this band. And we need to sound like these guys. Now we need to sound like them. So how many?
This is my, third band. I play, there's another one in between, but we like kind of only played a show or two and that was sort of it. But I played in a pop punk band called Out of Options for a long time. And then played in another band that was started as kind of a bit of a post-hardcore band called Bombing Neverland. And we ended up just becoming more of a rock band. And then now I play in a band called Sessions.
Right. I remember seeing Bombing Neverland at a St. Louis in a St. Louis in Burlington. And Chris Riley was I don't know, was he serving or was he working in the kitchen? And then he had to like break and play and then go back to work.
So we there's a bit of history with that St. Louis place too, because we three of us all worked there in that band, and our friend Jesse Bai, who Jesse still does shows and promotes shows in like the Southern Ontario area, he was working there, and he was like, "Look, I can hire whoever I want. Do you guys want to work here? And then when you guys need to go on tour, you can just go on tour and then come back and have a job." And we're like, "Yes, absolutely." So we did that. We also got them to hire a bunch of our other friends. And then all of our other buddies would just usually come down every day because there'd be one, two, three, four of us there. And we basically started calling it Shitty Cheers because it was like Cheers. Like every day was like that, except it was St. Louis. So it was a shitty chicken wing place. But we kind of made it our own thing. And we used to do shows there. We booked Chris Rowe from the Ataris to play an acoustic show there. And man, do I wish I had a videotape of his reaction when he first pulled up and realized he was playing a chicken wing place in like a strip mall in Burlington.
Hey, you get, well, it was Burlington. We played everywhere.
That's right.
Everywhere.
And especially at that time too, that was kind of like, you know, that was after like the Y stopped really doing shows and there wasn't Music Center shows or whatever. So it's kind of like, you know, the Red Rooster was doing shows still, but that was pretty much it. So there wasn't really any place fit to do them. So we just did them in places that were completely unfit to have shows. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of fun.
It was a dandy, dandy time.
Oh, the Red Rooster.
Oh, Craig hates me today. Craig's like,
that's today.
It's a good point. It's a good point. But now you play in Sessions. So who's in Sessions? I know we talked to Brandon about this earlier, but let's hear it from you.
Yeah. So obviously Brandon Pascoa, old homie of mine. So he is also like a co-lead singer and co-band leader songwriter. And then my best bud Rick Babiarz plays drums. So Ricky was the drummer. He was the second drummer in Bombing Neverland, and we've just kind of always played together ever since then. And his brother Matt is playing bass.
Nice.
And we like it started just not even really to be a band. Rick's family had some big sort of celebration or whatever, and I guess he really, really liked Bombing Neverland and wanted Bombing Neverland to play. And we're like, well, we're not a band anymore, so yeah, that's probably not going to happen. And he's like, well, do you want to put together a cover band? And like, maybe we'll ask Brandon if he wants to do it, and my brother. I'm like, yeah, sure. So we put together a couple covers, and then COVID happened. So then that was the end of that. And, you know, when things started to open up a little bit more, we decided to just get together and jam for the hell of it. And like, you know, I had a bunch of ideas that I was playing around with, because especially when you're like in lockdown, you don't have much else to do. So kind of take advantage of that. And Brandon had some ideas too. And we're like, well, do we want to write some originals and see how they feel? And so we did. And that was kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. And if, so if people don't know, having like co-singers, like co-leads on in a band is a very Burlington thing to do.
It is.
It is. And it's, so Burlington, it's Burlington.
Which is, and the irony of that is this is the first time I've ever been in a band with two co-lead singers. I was always the lead singer in every other project. And
there's a lot of, yeah.
And it's,
but there's
and
a lot
it's,
of Canadian examples.
For sure. And I can honestly say, I wish I did this earlier because it's so much easier. You only have to sing half. And especially as we get older, you know, you're not able to like, you know, hack butts and drink a bunch of beers and go out and sing 20 songs. Okay-ish. No. Now it's like, I got to sing six and that's a fair amount.
And is it the case of like, these are the, like that people tend to sing the songs that they wrote principally or?
Yeah. I think it started like that. And then, I mean, we like the first song that we put out, Sorry, Not Sorry, it has both Brandon and I singing. And, you know, it was the original demo was just me singing on it. And I don't know, I kind of thought, well, maybe we have a little bit of back and forth. It was tough to sing because there was a bit of vocal overlap. And we were like, well, maybe we do some back and forth. And it kind of worked. And we really liked it. And so now most of the newer stuff that we're working on is like specifically written where both of us are kind of co-singing on pretty much every song. Like whether it's like, you take this verse or I take this verse or we split it up, or it's like, okay, I'll take the verses in pre-chorus and then you sing this hook. So like now it's kind of like, it doesn't really matter who writes the songs. We're kind of trying to double down on the fact that we have two people that sing and sound kind of different. And, you know, we're like, we're not that good at guitar and stuff like that, but like we can kind of sing. So we're like, we'll just, you know, we'll double down on that instead.
Nice. I don't know. I think you're both, pretty accomplished guitar players. It's better than me. I mean, there's that.
Oh, don't undersell yourself, buddy. You're a great player.
Oh no, I haven't. I actually haven't picked up guitar in way too long. Way too long. I just too busy like, doing other like, shit.
It's like riding a bike. You'll pick it back up. I'm better at guitar when I don't play guitar. When I start playing it more, I start overthinking it. Maybe it's just because like, you know, you've played for so long and you know you kind of know what to do and. You pick it back up, you're like, yeah, you're just, it's like golf. You're going in with zero expectations because you haven't played it. And then you're like, I'm going to just suck. So it's fine. And you actually kind of play better. And then when you start practicing and you realize my ceiling is pretty low and I'm not actually that good, then you actually get worse at playing. So that's
fair. Your golf analogy doesn't fit with me. The first time that I went and played golf was in Florida with my wife's father. And the first swing, I divoted like a motherfucker and broke my wrist.
Oh fuck!
And
that's the worst.
And that's the last thing you want is an emergency hospital visit in Florida because I just want to cut shit off.
And also having an injury in golf, it's like the least contact sport there is.
Yeah, because you know you've done it to yourself,
oh,
right?
For sure. Like it wasn't choices like are... Yeah, it wasn't like I went to go make this amazing play and like, you know, I caught the ball and dove and really hurt myself. It's like you don't have to say anything. Everybody knows what happened.
Or you ran into a guy that's like, you know, 6'4" and 900 pounds, you know.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I hit him. Broken wrist, right? Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. But yeah, no.
Yeah.
No,
did it so I actually hit the ball so hard that I broke my wrist.
See, there you go. It doesn't work that way.
So I was thinking about what you were talking about before and examples like The Band, Blue Rodeo, Sloan. There's a ton, The Odds. There's a ton of Canadian bands tend to do this more than other countries' bands.
Well, Kiss.
And like, yes. Yeah, yeah.
The Beatles. Sorry.
Who?
Right, John? We were talking. We were talking.
We were chatting.
You know, we just have a lot.
How did he get up top?
Oh, Dimitri had to jump out and then
jump back in.
Good. Hey.
Yeah. So
I pay attention.
So, I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know if like you have a theory on why more Canadian bands tend to do this multiple lead singer thing than other countries' bands.
I think at least from our like little 905 scene, it was a pretty like people were like really passionate. So like whenever, and like the songs were really chanty. And so, you know, whenever you go see like, you know, like a Jersey show or Outspan or whatever, it's like every song would always have these big, like sort of, you know, all in sort of chanting, singing moments and whatever. And everybody would run up and grab the mic and stuff like that. So that's probably just what would happen. Like when you're in the band, it's like, well, of course I'm also going to be jumping in and singing on this. And then at that point, then it's, you know, then it's like, well, I guess you sing in this band too. So, you know, jump in.
I just remember going over and hanging out with Comer, Scotty Comer. He would recorded everybody, right?
Yep.
And it didn't matter who the band was, like if it was Boys Night Out or Walker's Line or fuck whoever, right? It was like, okay, we're going to throw a party. We're going to get everybody over. We're going to get them. We're going to get everybody like liquefied. And then we're going to go in the basement. We're all going to do gang vocals for 2 hours.
Yep.
That was Burlington.
Yeah.
All the time.
Fantastic.
Do you guys got any shows coming up? What's going on? What are you guys doing?
We don't have anything.
Bovine, right? Like not too long ago.
We played Bovine last summer, and then we played Past Presents Future last December. And then we were kind of like, well, we should probably finish the record and not play any shows until it's ready. So it's done now. So we're just, I think, finalizing artwork and, you know, going to be doing some physical pressing and stuff like that. And then, I don't know, we'll probably play again in June and then start playing a little more actively again. Mm-hmm. We just like, you know, we didn't want to like, you know, be that band that just keeps playing. And it's like, yeah, same four songs. Here we go. Can you guys play a longer set? We cannot.
We cannot.
We can't play more than six songs.
That's right. That's
you know what? It's not unheard of.
Yeah.
So Saint Alvia with Rispin and Boobs and where's his name?
Greg Taylor?
Greg, thank you. I'm like, Craig, yeah. No, that's not it. No, it's not it. Yeah. Greg. I remember one of the first shows that they did. By the way, they went above and beyond. It wasn't only two singers, it was three.
Yep.
Which is why not?
Plus also Richmond, their drummer, is also a singer. So
he is.
You know?
He is.
It was, yeah.
It was weird. I think everybody in that band sang at one point.
Yeah, they're like slow.
Very much exactly. Like but they did. They
and
did
the
shows.
Beatles and the Beatles.
Who?
And the fucking Beatles.
They did shows. I remember they did shows, and I remember going to a show at Horseshoe, and they played. I think it was four songs, and then did a cover of Bob O'Reilly, and then left.
Nice.
And just like walked off stage, and that was it. Martin was there. We were playing pool. I was like, Martin, you got to see this band. He's like, cool, let's go.
Who?
Martin Streak.
I,
you know, he was part of the Beatles.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right, yeah. He sang lead for the Beatles.
He did. He replaced John Lennon.
Right.
That's misinformation.
When he was,
that's what they call misinformation and disinformation on TikTok, my friend.
When John Lennon had Ebola, Martin Streak filled in.
That is full on misinformation. We just got banned on TikTok.
He thought he was filling in for Joe Strummer.
Oh my God. Okay.
But anyway, so right. Yeah, they played Bob O'Reilly, and I remember Martin, because they started out playing it. Martin Street turned around and looked at me and he goes, fucking really? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, you don't play the Who? And he put the fucking pool cue down and walked out of the bar. And left me there. And I was like, wow. He's like, I'm never listening to this band again. I'm like, okay, cool.
Wow.
And then
they got played on the edge.
And then they got played on the edge.
Yeah.
And he had to talk to them and stuff. It was the best. He's like, oh, I got to interview St. Alvia. And I'm like, yeah, it sucks to be you.
Yeah.
How many songs we got on this album?
So it's going to be 7. So we've got 4 songs that are out already. Yep. We've got a new track, Kool-Aid, coming out on Friday. And then we'll release the album with 2 more songs and kind of bundle them all together. And then that'll be that. And then we'll start playing some more shows. And we've already started working on the next record. Actually, Brandon was down in my place all weekend. We were in the studio demoing and playing around with some ideas. So I think the idea is like, you know, putting out records and whatnot, but also taking a bit of an always-on approach. So when this drops, we'll probably put out another single, you know, 2-3 months after the album comes out. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of do it all again.
It's the way to do it now. Like, instead of like, at least like, you know, throw like a couple out there ahead of time.
Yeah.
And see what sticks.
That's exactly it. Right. And it's like, you know, especially, you know, we're a new band in the eyes of people that are finding us on Spotify and Apple and whatnot. And you know, people are probably going to be mostly focused on 1 or 2 tracks anyway. So might as well let them kind of live with that and then hit them with another song. So each song kind of gets its own little kind of lifespan. It makes our 6-song live performance way more impactful because they know all of them.
Right, exactly. But you guys have been doing really well, like in regards to like streams and like pushes on like Spotify and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know what? We're pretty surprised by that. You know,
a lot of playlists picked you up and stuff.
Yeah. You know, obviously we love the tunes, but we've had way more support than I think we were expecting to have. And it's been very humbling to see that. And it's really cool, actually, you know, watching your music travel in the digital landscape these days where, you know, our biggest market is Germany. And, you know, there's people listening to our music all over the world. And, you know, we haven't done them yet because we're we're not professional enough, but we've had show offers to go to Europe and things like that. So
you gotta go.
I know. Well,
just go. It's, you know,
I know. It's, we just, you know, we get in our own way. You know, we go, we've got kids.
It's different now.
It is. And it's
very different now.
And I think when we started this project, I was saying to the guys, I'm like, I don't want to try to make this a thing. I just want to do this for ourselves and do everything we're not supposed to do. And oddly enough, it's working better than most things that we've been a part of. And I mean, we've played a couple of festivals and they're like, can you send us a promo pic? And like, none of them have like our faces in any of them. And they're like, do you have something with your faces? And we're like, no. And they're like, do you have a bio? And it's like, I don't know. And like, Every time I just make one up and it's usually something ridiculous. And I think some of the guys in the band are probably like, come on, man, please don't write something stupid. And that's it. It's like, well, now I'm definitely doing that. So
now we're
that's our bio. Yeah. But no, I think we'll
your
we'll
mic's off, Craig.
Maybe that's why you're only playing 6 songs because you don't have a bio.
That's it. Well, and you know, we don't want to play anymore because it's hard work. So
yeah,
6 songs.
You should just speak your bio in the middle of your set.
Yeah,
and just have everybody chime in with like, "Hi, I'm Brandon. I used to play in blah 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 yada yada," and give like his whole discography, and then move on to each member, and then your set gets really big.
And then 1, 2, 3, 4, and then just go into the next one, right?
Yeah,
that's it. I wanted to do. You guys remember when Kanye and Jay-Z did that record together, the collab record?
Watch the Throne.
That's right. So they toured, but they only had the one record, and I guess they did a couple of Kanye songs and a couple of Jay-Z songs, but they only had the one record. And I think just to keep the playing ground even, they just mostly played the record. So they ended with Paris, which was the big single.
Yep.
And then the encore was just them playing it five times in a row. And I'm like, that is wicked. I think that's hilarious. And it's like, nobody seemed to care. And then by the fourth time, everybody thought it was hilarious and then went even crazier. I'm like, that would be a fun thing to try.
I would go home. I would go home.
But wouldn't you be curious to be like, I do kind of want to see
how much longer are they going to do this?
Could you imagine back in the day, New Order finishing with Blue Monday five times? 8.5 minute song. And people would be like, okay, guys, no. We're not listening to this again. I'm sorry. No.
The cult plays Common People 12 times in a set.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's not the edited version either. The full thing.
Did you say the cult plays did Common People?
Jump on him.
Yeah, my bad.
Give him hell, Dimitri.
Dimitri, easy.
Dimitri is known as Dimitripedia.
To me.
And I think he should have his own show. And I say this all the time.
Yeah.
Because he knows more things than I've ever seen anybody know.
You guys should make a show.
We should do a show and have Dimitri on it.
You should. But or maybe make a segment of this show where it's like, try to stump Dimitri. Like, find some really obscure shit and see how deep-rooted his knowledge is.
That's actually not a bad idea.
There you go, Craig.
Great idea. There you go. Cool. All right.
It's like win Ben Stein's money.
That's right. Well, I love that show.
And or if you get a sponsor, it's like, well, this episode's brought to you by this. And the prize pack for those who can stump Dimitri, get a lovely prize pack from, you know, Hello Cannabis or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Do you guys remember the show Beat the Geeks? Do you remember that show?
Yeah, kind of. I love that show.
There was a music geek actually that was on, and he was really, really funny. And every time they would page one of the geeks and they would say, okay, such and such geek, you're up next, the music geek went, he did the whole David Byrne. David Byrne, you may ask yourself, why did I challenge the music geek, right? And it was so per. Anyway, you had to be there. Laugh, Derek. Anyway, okay, so John, I want to talk.
I'm astonished that you went and Dimitri went, David Burns. This is all you did.
Yeah.
All you did was this.
That's true.
What the fuck is this? Yeah. Nothing.
Once in a lifetime.
I know, but hey. Dimitri goes, David Burns.
We didn't say it like that, Derek. No, you're doing the person making fun of a man speaking voice.
Smugly,
right? So, but we do the same thing with women when we make fun. When I tease my wife or something, I'm like, and my voice goes. Anyway, okay, John, we got to talk about your influences here because I like to find out about musicians and songwriters and all of that good stuff. Influences. Let's go backwards, shall we, my friend? Are John Lennon and Paul McCartney your biggest influences? Inside joke, people.
I mean, they are up there. I do have like a Beatles thing on the wall right behind me.
I've got a Beatles poster on the wall. As a matter of fact, the next tattoo that my man Derek's going to do for me eventually is going to be the Beatles right here. The logo on Ringo's bass drum.
Is it true that in the end, the love
you take is equal to the love you make?
Is it true?
Well, I've not.
You know, yes. Yes, it is. Yes,
there you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, no, awesome. So Beatles and what else?
I mean, I grew up on a lot of skate punk. So I grew up on NoFX and things like that. I'm a huge Thrice fan. I think that band's incredible. And they're just a different band every time. And they're so good live. I mean, I a lot of my influences also come from the little scene that I came from. I mean, Grade and Jersey were big ones for me growing up. And to see bands making music that good that also lived down the street from me was kind of like, I could probably do this too. Those guys can do it. I can probably do it.
Makes you pull up your bootstraps. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, was I wrong, but you know, I said, still trying. So
good for you.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, you know, that would be, you know, that for sure. I mean, I love a lot of everything. Like, you know, from being a NoFX fan, you do your homework and you're like, who's NoFX's favorite band? Oh, the Misfits. All right. So I'm going to go back and listen to the Misfits. And so, you know, you love that. And, you know, Clash, the Sex Pistols and stuff. But I also love the band. And I also, you know, love Creedence Clearwater. You know, it's just, I'm a huge, huge music production guy too. Like Derek and I, we were talking at the beginning. I love making records. I love that more than probably playing live shows. And I love playing shows, but I love being in a studio and having together, finding sounds and, you know, spending time and getting that like snare drum to sound like a sledgehammer.
Like
that's hit.
It's like a drug. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. Totally. So, yeah, I love making,
you know,
music too. Yeah.
And, you know, but it's a beautifully recorded, polished record as much as I love Nirvana in Utero and Steve Albanian records. It's like, you know, they're all phenomenal in their own way. And I think that's sort of the beauty of production where, you know, Albany's big thing is I want to capture the sound of that band in a room. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I like Blink-182 and it's like Jerry Finn's sounds on Enema of the State are still what pop punk records sound like today.
I love Blink. I always have. Yeah. I always loved them. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
There's a great documentary if you get a chance. I don't know if you've seen the one that was done on Butch Vig by any chance in Smart Studios?
No, I haven't.
It's really, really well done. So talking about Nirvana and everything, obviously with, you know, I mean, with Butch's productions. Yeah. You know, and of course everything with the whole Madison, Wisconsin scene. It's a great documentary. Check it out when you get a chance. It's awesome.
Yes, please. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and like, you know, I'll watch any music documentary, even if it's like,
me
like
too.
I'm not a Bee Gees guy, but I love the Bee Gees documentary. That was wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I find the older that you get, even things that you were a little bit snobby about, you kind of come around on and you're like, you know what? That was actually pretty good. Not my thing, but it was really great for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sort of starting to kind of get there a little bit with Guns N' Roses. I can appreciate it a little more now that I'm a bit older, right? I fucking hate Axl Rose, like, with an absolute passion, right?
Yeah,
I do too. But I love Slash. I think Duff McKagan is a great bass player, right? Like, they're great musicians, you know?
Yep.
It's just, it's Axl. But anyway. But I'm starting to appreciate it. Like they've got, for me, the Guns have got some just fucking great moments. So.
Oh, of course. Of course. And I agree with you. I 100% agree. And was never a huge Guns guy. Also, like, Axl's voice, I always kind of found a little jarring. Like, that wasn't for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my problem, too.
Yeah, but I got to hang out with Slash a bunch of years ago. It was probably, like, 2014 or something like that. And really, really good guy. Like, really, really, really good guy. And that, you know, that kind of makes you appreciate it a little bit more. Where, like, you kind of have this sort of, you're going to be like one of those like classic like D-bag rock stars, and was absolutely not.
Yeah. I've heard if you catch Axl on a good day, he's actually a good interview, but it's just, you just say you have to catch him on a good day. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a Slash being even Slash. Then should we say back then, like even like 90s Slash was still, Even with all the substances and stuff, he was still apparently like the nicest person to chat with and like just kind of meet up with or whatever. He was just a sweet dude.
And just a fucking great player too. It's just such like everything that he did with, you know, I mean, Slash the Snake Pit is great. Guns is great. Velvet Revolver was fucking fantastic. His playing and like him and Duff and Velvet Revolver were fucking amazing. Like it was just, they're just great musicians. So yeah.
So just a question.
Yes.
We were talking I tend to, we've talked to quite a few people from Burlington.
You're welcome.
Yep. And I have to ask, how do you form a scene? What is a good way to foster a local music scene, in your opinion?
Well, going back to our pal Ben Risman, him and I have talked about this at length, because the scene was already going when I entered the scene. I think I went to my first show when I was in grade 8. We've talked about this quite a bit, and I think everybody has really simple. I'll boil it down to one moment. So there's this free local music festival called Sound of Music Festival, and you know, people play downtown, they get some big bands, they get some legacy acts and whatnot. And I will never forget, and it seems like everybody that was a key player in even getting the scene going had the same, like, oh shit moment. We went to go see that everybody heard that there was this local band from Burlington called the Rainbow Butt Monkeys playing.
Oh yeah.
So everybody that was a kid that liked rock music was like, no way, there's a band from Burlington? Okay. And we all went to see them, and they were amazing.
Yes.
And then all of the sudden, I just remember local shows starting to happen. Like, there was a place called the Yellow Sub that always used to do shows there. The Burlington Polish Hall used to do shows there. It's like, it was just like, maybe there were some shows before. I don't remember any of them at all. I just remember after that, all of a sudden, shows started to happen. And then there was a while, and there was a really good run where there's a place called the Burlington Music Center where the, like, teen tour marching band rehearses. And they had this great little live room. And this guy, Mark, that everybody called Snacks, he played in a band called Two Face. He, I guess, cut a deal with them, and he would just start putting on shows every Friday. So every Friday he could go down to there, you know, four or five local bands. So it just... It not only became an outlet for people to want to play music and to start bands and whatnot, but it was also like, it was kind of like the thing that you would go do. You know, you're living
in like it was kind of like, it was kind of like your CBGB kind of thing, right?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we live in Burlington, so it's like, well, if we're not here, we're going to be drinking in parks, and that's probably it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
somebody giving you access to a cool space.
It was that, and then a couple of other key players. Another guy, Tim Park, he owned this place called the Music Gym, which was a recording studio, which is still there. Justin Coop runs it now and makes records out of there called B-Town Sound. But Tim Park owned it and ran it, and it was like this cool recording studio and jam space. So it's like you had a rehearsal room if you didn't have a parent's basement that you could set up in. And that also just became sort of like a social network where every day, anytime you go to jam there, you'd see four or five dudes that you knew in other bands or whatever, and you'd shoot the shit and be like, oh, you know what, we should play a show, let's do a show. And then next thing you know, you're back and forth, and then you've set up a show. So it was really sort of DIY grassroots, that everybody just, like, there wasn't really like a, you should, like, there's like a teaching of how to do it. It's like everybody just started doing it, and it really felt like it was right after that show that it just started.
there wasn't like a manifesto. It's just, it was of a happy accident, really, is what it seems like. It just, there happened to be a bunch of, you know, like-minded individuals ready to rock, basically.
That's right. And awesome. You know, I think it also was part of the reason why, you know, there's a lot of ribs from that scene that lot of them have gone on to be really successful. Like, I mean, Butt Monkeys, Finger 11, you know, you've got St. Alvia, and like Grade invented a genre.
Billy Talent. You know,
Billy Talent, Silverstein, you know, still massive band. Boys Night Out had a great run. Walk Off the Earth, massive. And I think for all of them, whether it be Walk Off being more of like a pop leaning band, or like a Silverstein or something like that, it really, really instilled this DIY ethos into everybody. All of those bands still, like, as huge as they are, it's still all self-managed infrastructure. And I think that all came from how we grew up. And, you know, none of us ever thought that anybody would ever have a career in music. It just happened. And I think, you know, whether it's, you know, chatting with Alexis guys or whatever, they still take the same approach. They work with Joel, who manages them and whatnot, but it's still a very DIY machine that they've built.
And yeah, it's really based off networking though. Like it was always like, oh, we know these guys, we know those guys, we know these people. Let's do a show, blah, blah, blah. Yep. We'll put it together. We'll do, what was it, the Oak Room? The Pine Room?
Yeah. Yeah. Pine Room.
The Pine Room, YMCA, the Music Center, like all these different, the fucking Dickens, right? Like these different places where you were like, you know, what was it? The Dickens, like Boobs was working at the Dickens, right?
Yeah.
And, somebody had an in, and the minute you had your foot in the door, it was like, okay, I've got my foot in the door. Everybody else come too.
Yeah.
Which is really great. And I think, Dimitri, if I can step on that question is like, how do, like, 'cause there's not a lot of places for young kids, for people now that, to put on shows and do something. And that's the way you got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to get your, you got to get your foot in the door, and then get everybody else in.
Yeah, that's it. And it's a rabid sort of community too, where I think because of the standards of the bands that we all have to look up to, where it's like, okay, Rainbow Butt Monkeys and Finger 11, it's like, that's a massive band. That's your bar. So whatever you're doing, you gotta be good like that. And then it's like, okay, here's this band, great. It's like, you still put on Under the Radar. It's like, that's a fucking good record. So you better be fucking good at what you do. And it's a really, really, it was a really hard musical community to cut through in, because there were so many good and talented bands. But it was always really interesting when you go on tour and you go play in these other markets and whatnot. You'd always expect everybody else to just always be that good, and they weren't. So it was kind of fun, because you'd go and you'd go show up and play Ottawa or whatever with these other bands, and you'd like, not to sound arrogant, but it's like you'd wipe the floor with them, because they were just like, they weren't used to having this level to try to compete with. Where we go back and play a hometown show, and it's like, all right, it's us, Protest, The Hero, The Reason, and Boys Night Out. We're definitely the worst band on this bill.
I remember conversations with Connor and Jeff about touring, and they toured with a little band called Fall Out Boy. and Boys Night Out at the time was massive.
Yeah.
And then they went to the States, and it was like fucking crickets. Like everybody's like, nobody knows. And then Fall Out Boy did, you know, their huge fucking push or whatever, right? Like you never know. Yep. But what you're saying is like, you gotta play for the fence. Like every night you gotta play for the fence.
Oh yeah.
You do. Or if not, you gotta have something that makes you kind of stand out in some sort of way, or it's just, you know, that's kind of it.
Like I remember, I remember seeing Maestro. Like the first time I saw Maestro Fresh West was in some fucking community center in Rexdale, and I was like,
awesome.
Holy shit. This is amazing. Yep. Like this is amazing. And now he's who he is, right? Like, God, I think it was like a couple of years after, and he was who he was. But it's like, you gotta have something. You gotta have something.
But it's so cool though when you get to see those artists right before it happens, and like you have your oh shit moment, and you're like, okay. And then, you know, a year or two later, you're kind of like, oh yeah, you know, it's about time. Because that's been happening for a bit, but it's cool, and it's even better when it's, you know, the artist has no idea, they're just like having fun and whatever, and it's like, oh, you have no idea what's about to happen.
Yeah, you're like seconds away from like, oh fuck, this is gonna be great. Yeah. Speaking of, oh great, you're gonna let us do something, aren't you?
Okay.
Tonight,
sure.
You're gonna let us play something. You're gonna let us play a song.
Oh, hell yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm gonna let you guys do that.
And I like that. I know we'd do it anyway, regardless of what you said, because you already gave it to us.
That's right. Already loaded in the machine.
Already loaded. John, it has been a treat. It is it's a 48-minute conversation. I like it. Fun, we always go long. We go long all the time.
It's because you're back, Derek.
Did you not go long when I wasn't here?
No. We did. No. We did.
Fucking lie to me, Craig.
An hour and 15 and we were done.
Yeah.
Three songs each and an interview. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just fucking with you.
You wish.
No, we did go wish.
So, John,
this has been great, man. Honestly, John, thanks, brother. This has been great.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. This is I've done a lot less fun interviews. This just felt like a hang, like we were hanging out and having beers. So
we were hanging.
You just did an interview with for Steeltown, right?
I did. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that was awesome. Jamie's a great dude too.
Look at me plugging other podcasts.
Hell yeah!
I'll get a stern letter from Craig later.
It's all
jar of piss.
Jar of piss. Okay.
Jar of piss. John, it's been a delight. Thank you, my friend. It's good to see you, and I hope to get out to a show soon. That'd be really good. I was like, oh, you guys just played the Vovine. Oh yeah, that was last year, Derek.
Please keep us posted, brother. If you've got a show or something coming up, we'll put it up on the radio station for you.
Oh, that would be amazing. Thank you guys so much. And you know, if you guys want to come out and check out the show, we'll make sure you guys are on the list. And we'll hopefully have seven songs by then.
Well, I hope at least you add this one.
Well done, John. Well done, brother. Good for you.
I hope we add this one.
It's going to be seven versions of Paris.
I swear to God, if you guys do a cover of Paris while we're at the next show, I will be very happy.
No, it's going to be Bob O'Reilly.
It's going to be
there you go.
That I don't mind. You know, I don't mind. It's hard to do Paris though.
I was about to say.
No, I meant lyrically.
Lyrically,
it's a tough one to put over.
It's going to be just
as a white guy from Burlington.
That's right. It'll be an instrumental cover.
Do that.
Right on.
Tonight we've been talking to John Fielding from Sessions. Sessions is a band. You can find them on Instagram, Facebook, SoundCloud, and every other Spotify, Apple Music, all the things. I think there's some YouTube stuff up too. Don't you guys get some YouTube stuff?
It's everywhere.
Yeah. This is the newest track from them. This is called Kool-Aid, and it's not released yet, and we get to do it first.
This is a world premiere, folks.
World premiere right here on Revolution Radio Canada. Canadian as fuck, episode 87. Thank you. Spin the track, Craig.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Kevin. I'm blind.
Connie Teeson, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at BroadcastDialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundel from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.